Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. This is Carrie, and we have an exciting show for you tonight. We have a very special guest, Paul Hope, the author of Policing the Paranormal. And I'm just waiting for April to get on. So bear with me. Okay. April.
Hey, everybody. Yep, thanks for bringing me on. I'm currently sitting in front of my computer trying desperately to log talk the real way. But, hey, this always works.
Work with what we got.
So, yeah. I mean, it's not like we don't do this friggin' every week anyway. So, really looking forward to tonight's episode. Carrie set this one up, and kind of funny how life takes us. And I'll kind of explain that a little bit more when we start to talk to Mr. Hope. But first of all, as always, Carrie, how was your week?
My week was pretty good. I found out some exciting news at work that I can't really talk about yet, but when I can, super duper excited. Let's see. I worked on ASVIN's IEP plan for the school year this year and next year. They're adding some new therapies and stuff in, so that's something, you know, exciting for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And in a month or two, we are going to meet with the team from her middle school and work on the plan for middle school next year.
That's awesome. So what does that entail exactly? Like, how does that work?
The middle school or the IEP?
Yeah, the IEP.
So an IEP is an individual education plan, and any kid that has any kind of disability has one in school, and it's a plan that you make with the teachers, special education teachers, coordinators, aides, any therapists that they have, the school psychologist, the school social worker, just to allow them to get the education they need, any assistances that they need. It kind of varies kid to kid, and then once she goes to middle school, we'll redo everything. So,
well, that's pretty neat. I mean, it's kind of cool that all these people come together to coordinate on, you know, the education of one person. That's kind of cool.
Oh yeah, I'm very thankful. The county that we live in has a really good special education team, and I can really see the difference that it's made for her. So, very pleased with it.
Yeah.
So how about you? How was your week?
Oh God.
Your big week, so, big international week.
Big international week. So, first thing you need to know about me is that for the people out there listening, I don't travel. I don't leave the country. I don't leave the state if I can help it. I mean, I'm all for, you know, exploring and stuff like that and adventures. I'm all for it. But there are definitely limits to my adventurous personality, and at some point I just become a hermit. I just go ahead and revert back to my homeostasis, which is to be a hermit. And unfortunately, I had kind of a rough trip to Germany. So the way out there was fantastic. I was able to ride business class and on Iceland Air, and Icelandic Air is just a great airline to begin with, but I really get to see the difference between coach and then actually their business class. Their business class was fantastic, just almost like a regular, like, lazy boy chair, you know, is what you're sitting in. And it was nice because it's about 11 hours worth of flight time, And it's nice to be in something that's a little bit more comfortable than, you know, the freaking cattle truck that they put you in coach. So that was really nice. Completely unexpected. It was, you know, I guess they had extra seats and they just picked us randomly. That was awesome. Got there. 2 days into my trip, I had to go to the German hospital to have an emergency root canal. And something about flying. So I didn't know this, but when you fly on a plane sometimes, the air bubble will, there's, you know, if you have a cavity, which I didn't even know I had, there can be an air bubble in your tooth. And because of the air pressure, that air bubble can expand and contract, and it can do some really nasty stuff. So I ended up with an infection and had to have that emergency root canal, and it was terrible. We get to the hospital, and the poor dentist doesn't speak a lick of English. I certainly don't speak German, and I'm just sitting there, like, pointing at my tooth. Thank God I had my friend with me, Emily. She was fantastic, and she's just, like, trying her best to help us out, but basically it just involved me pointing at my tooth and telling her help over and over again. Then, let's see, tried to leave, and she asked me to go out this door, and you had to press, like, this button on the side of the door for the door to unlock and you to go out. So, you know, fairly typical hospital. Well, unfortunately, I didn't pay enough attention to which button was being pressed, and I don't speak German, so I'm sitting there pressing all these buttons. I end up turning all the lights off in the damn hallway. I couldn't find my way out. So the nurse comes out and she's like, "Oh, what did you do?" You know, and she finally helps me. And there's a cleaning lady in the hallway and she's just staring daggers at me the whole time. She's like, "This asshole's messing with me." And I'm just sitting there like, "I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm pressing." So that was great. Almost got hit by a train, but I got yelled at. I got yelled at by some German ladies. She was very angry with me, and I got angry back with her because, you know, I just, I think my automatic response to somebody being an a-hole to me is to be an a-hole back. So there was the train was coming, and like the alarms or whatever were going off, and I walked into what I thought was the center platform, but apparently it was not within the path of the train. Like, I could see the train. The train wasn't going to hit me. I could freaking see where it was. But apparently it was not an okay place to be. Although there were other people standing there. There were also other people standing there. And they didn't work there. They were just regular people. So I thought that was okay. I can't freaking read. And the lady, like, poked me, basically, in the, you know, through the air. It was like, ding, ding. And, that was all she wrote for me to be an a-hole back. So I was like, yeah, ding, ding, bitch. I don't know what you want me to do. Like, so she was not happy with me. So she started chirping at me in German and tried to follow me kind of to my hotel. And I basically had to turn around and look as menacing as I could. And that was about it. That was all she wrote. But it was just kind of a shitty experience, honestly. I didn't really think it was that pretty. Everybody says it's pretty. I really didn't think so. Maybe it'll grow on me. Maybe it's just because I am a hermit. And the rest of the time I was there, other than the food that I was eating that was phenomenal, I basically stayed in my hotel room and kind of would peek my head out every once in a while, walk around the block or something. But that's pretty much it. I didn't really get to see too much other than just Stuttgart proper. So maybe the very first, like, German castle I see, I'll fall in love with it. I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Germany, so I have to imagine that that's going to be the way it goes, I hope. If not...
Yeah, maybe you just had a rough first trip.
Yeah, let's hope. Their food, though, is almost makes up for all of it. I almost don't care how many asshole German people I meet. It's going to be fine. Like, that food is amazing.
The cure,
like,
for everything.
I felt like I was on, it really is. I felt like I was on an episode of, like, I don't know, like Iron Chef or something the whole time I was there. They were serving me all sorts of things, and I was just eating it up, too. It was great. Oh, man. So great. But anyway, so... Germany. Well, oh, I did, though, while I was there. I did get some very soft permission to maybe investigate the base while I was there. And when I say base,
oh.
I mean a couple buildings, not the whole base, just like a couple of cool buildings on base. They're old, old, old buildings. I told everybody that I was a paranormal radio show host and even pointed them to our webpage and, you know, showed us on Paranormal After Party on YouTube and came away with, who knows, a couple of new fans maybe. So we'll see.
Nice.
Definitely looking forward to that, doing some international hunts. So we'll see.
Well, awesome. Hopefully that will pan out.
Yeah. Yep, definitely. So let's get into our topic of discussion tonight. I can't wait to talk to Mr. Hope.
So our guest tonight is Paul Hope, and he is the author of Policing the Paranormal. And it's a book with his and other people's experiences with the paranormal in Virginia's state capitol. So I have heard some stories before about the supposedly goings-on at the state capitol. And, of course, you know me. I'm always into hearing anything about history and the paranormal, and when they overlap, oh, it's just heaven.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really cool area, too, the Capitol. I usually stay, there's a hotel right next to it. I got to figure out what the hotel is named. I got to see if he knows anything about the hotel.
And it's really neat because the stories in the book aren't just about the state capitol. It's also the Supreme Court building, some stories from the executive mansion. I'm interested to see what kind of stories he can tell us. So I will go ahead and bring him on. Hello, Paul.
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, this is Carrie and April. Thank you so much for being on with us tonight.
Thank you.
Hey, Paul.
Hi.
Hey. So, funny enough, I said I was going to talk about this, you know, when we first came on, but weirdly enough, you and I have some common past together.
Yeah, you said. I got your message. I guess we used to work the same place.
Yeah, pretty funny. That's interesting,
yeah.
And I'm really interested to kind of talk a little bit about how you got on this path from that one. I think that's really interesting, and then if you think there's anything that has kind of supplemented some of the experiences that you've had based off of your experience in law enforcement, then I would love to hear that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So what led you from law enforcement to the paranormal?
Well, I'd always had an interest in paranormal from a very young age. And like I said, in the book, you know, you'll see that I grew up on a little island off the coast of the UK, a very historical island. I mean, we got settlements and stuff that date back to 5th, 6th century, Viking settlements and stuff. So a lot of history. We were a Celtic nation, one of the original 7 Celtic nations. There are a lot of folklore, myth, legend, and you know, ghost stories and stuff in our history. And as a kid, I can always remember people exchanging ghost stories and stuff. The teachers even used to tell us ghost stories. Cool, you know, you wouldn't see that kind of thing going on today. But and my parents too had experiences with the paranormal, so that kind of got me interested. When I became a cop in the U.S., I worked for Virginia Capitol Police for a few years back in the early 2000s, and I was surprised when I got that job. I was basically briefed by a sergeant and a lieutenant that because I was going on midnight shift, they told me a few things to expect, including, some paranormal activity that tends to go on down there. And I thought they were just messing with me because I was a rookie, you know. It only took a few days working there to realize they weren't lying. There was some really active paranormal activity going on down there, some strange stuff, and probably just about everyone that's worked there has had some sort of paranormal experience. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's really awesome. It's such a beautiful place, especially at night, you know, with everything all lit up.
Yeah, it is.
I commonly stay at the Commonwealth Park Suites, which kind of faces the Capitol, and it's for that very reason, because it's just so beautiful, and it's such, you know, really nice grounds there.
Yeah, it is an amazing place, and I was there before they did the restoration project on it as well, and it's looking even better now. But, you know, there are several buildings within the Capitol complex, not just the Capitol building, but you've got the, like, the Washington building and the Executive Mansion, what's known as Governor's Mansion. And you've got the General Assembly building, Patrick Henry building, the Supreme Court even was part of our Capitol complex. And the old Supreme Court building is very active as well. That's one of the most one of the more active locations.
Oh, I bet. What kind of activity do you get out of the Supreme Court building?
I detail a lot in the book. There was a shooting back in the day, back in the 70s, I believe it was. It was one of the guards, because it used to be the Federal Reserve. And there was an incident with one of the guards, and a few of the guard members got into a shootout. I think he opened fire, and they had to put him down, and I have some sort of work dispute or something. Anyway, he ended up they ended up killing him, and some of the activity is linked to that incident. I'd also heard from a old retired Capitol Police officer that came down to visit us one day. He said that back when it was the Federal Reserve building, there was an old retired guy that worked there as a night watchman. And he would basically walk around the building at night smoking a cigar. And his relief came in one day, and he was sitting in the chair dead. He passed away. They said he was pretty old.
Oh, wow.
And apparently after that, there was reports that people would still see him, maybe bump into him or smell his cigar smoke as he continued to do his rounds even after death. And that's one of the things I ran into when I was working there as a rookie was definitely a sense that someone was there. I was the only one in the building, and it was in the middle of the night. And then I got a strong smell of cigar smoke, and I investigated it and, you know, went and looked in offices, make sure there was no cigars burning and stuff like that. And there was nothing there. There was absolutely no one up there except me. But I definitely got that sensation that someone was there, and then I got the cigar smoke smell. So maybe it was him. Maybe he passed right by me. I don't know.
That's pretty incredible. That is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of other activity in there, and a lot of other officers have had some strange occurrences in there, witnessed some strange events. And, some people get very uncomfortable in that building. I know a couple of people who work down there that just refuse to be in there on their own, you know. So I've worked a lot of shifts in that building, stuck in that building overnight. It's an interesting place.
That's really interesting. Has there ever been a time when you have felt uncomfortable, and if so, when and where?
I felt uncomfortable in several of the locations around the Capitol, including the Executive Mansion, the Capitol building. There's definitely something there. And this is even before I had heard from other officers of their experiences, so it wasn't like I went in there with the belief that the place was haunted. I had gone in there not expecting anything and had experiences, you know, and it led me to conclude that, those places are definitely haunted. But, you know, as historical as the area is, it's not really surprising.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
I live here in Richmond, and I always like to joke that show me somewhere in Richmond that isn't haunted is probably going to be the real challenge.
Yeah, it's a very historical area. Eventually I worked in Hanover County, and we got the battlefields in Hanover, you know, Cold Harbor Battlefield and stuff like that. And
I heard
from officers on that department and one of the National Parks Police of activity that's been witnessed in those locations as well, Golf Right House, Cold Harbor Battlefield, Beaver Dam Creek, all historic battlefield areas.
Yeah, we're actually looking at going to... there's a log cabin in a house on 360, that a good friend of ours, Ryan Jones, owns, and we're looking to go there. I know that there was a lot of really interesting history there that involved a family that was a murder-suicide, and it was also a site of some really bad abuse before that, you know, leading up to it. So he's got this property. There's also, I think, a massacre that occurred on that land. Isn't that right, Carrie? It was one of the site of one of the battles specifically?
It backs right up to, I think, the Cold Harbor battlefield. And they think that maybe some of the people that died in the battle might be buried on the property.
Yes. Yeah, so it's really interesting. Yeah, it's right there within, I think, Hanover, and we'll be up there. We were supposed to go this weekend, but unfortunately, we're gonna have to push it back a bit. So we're trying to work out the exact dates now. But it should be a really interesting experience, and I know we're trying to get some answers for some of the relatives that are still living on that house. So,
pretty cool
opportunity.
Yeah, and there is a cemetery there, just up from the Cold Harbor battlefield. There's a cemetery. I forget the name of it, but it's where a lot of these some of the Civil War soldiers were buried. And
yes.
I've toured the area on Cold Harbor battlefield, and according to the information that the Rangers put out down there, I mean, there was I think it was several thousand people died during that battle from both sides. So yeah, it seemed quite a lot of death.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was definitely there's a picture I've seen floating around of people trying to bury just the piles of soldiers afterwards.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So how do you feel that your time in law enforcement has affected your experiences with the paranormal and how you document them or investigate them?
Well, being a police officer, we tend to be very evidence-based in our investigations. So we don't just make wild assumptions. We examine the facts, examine the evidence in front of us, and then draw conclusions from that. So it wasn't like something happened. I just automatically jumped to the conclusion that, you know, oh, it must have been paranormal. I did a little bit of snooping around, trying to gather a little bit of evidence and, you know, figure out what was going on. And quite often I came to the only conclusion that there is no rational explanation. And I wasn't alone in that. Like I said, probably just about everyone that worked Capitol Police when I was working there had their own experiences with the paranormal in and around the Capitol Square complex. Mm-hmm. And they said the same thing. You know, they had investigated what they saw and came to the conclusion that there's no other explanation. You know, there's no rational explanation. I mean, people saw everything from full-blown apparitions to objects moving, chairs moving, doors slamming. One of the most common occurrences there is footsteps in the hallway, especially in the Capitol building, because you got those hard marble floors, so the footsteps echo as well. You know, and you hear footsteps coming down the hallway. Or you hear voices. I heard voices inside a room, the old Senate chamber one night, and I heard voices like several people having a discussion in there, and I just assumed there was several people in the room having a discussion. So I unlocked the door and went in and turned the lights on. You know, no one there, not a soul. And,
wow.
You know, and then the voices stopped as well. But the footsteps are really common. I sat in the office at the west entrance one night and heard someone walk all the way down the hallway and figured it was my relief coming in to let me go grab a coffee or something. And I got off and stretched and stepped outside the office, and I'd heard the footsteps stop pretty much right in front of the office door. And when I stepped out, there was no one there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what prompted you to write the book? Was it just all the stories you've heard and your experiences?
Well, like I said, you know, I've always been interested in the paranormal ever since I was a kid. You know, I used to hear stories from my parents and stuff, and like I said, school teachers, friends, everything. You know, I've read a few books and stuff. But when I started working at Capitol Police, you know, we quite often sit around. I was, you know, because I was interested, I'd ask the guys, ask the officers that had been there for years, you know, and say, hey, you had any, ever had any experiences here? You know, because I kind of figured out in my own mind as well, what the heck's going on around here? You know, am I going crazy? Am I losing my mind?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd ask them about the stories, and the stories, some of them were incredible, you know, and it seemed that just about everyone there had stories to tell of their own experiences. And having read several books about the, you know, the paranormal activity in Richmond and in Virginia and stuff, I thought that there would definitely be an interest from readers about the activities going on at the Capitol. No one had ever written a book focused on the Capitol area, and I was sure that no one had ever written a book focused on the activity witnessed by police officers, you know, police officers' own experiences with the paranormal. So
yeah.
I took that and, you know, hey, you know, I kept telling people that when I was listening to them down at the Capitol, I kept telling people, somebody needs to write a book about this. You know, somebody really needs to write a book about it. This is amazing. And finally, after I left Capitol Police and I went to Hanover, I worked for the Hanover Sheriff for several years, I decided, you know what, no one's going to write a book about it. I might as well have a shot. And, you know, I just started writing it one night, and the whole thing took off. And several months later, I had interviewed a bunch of my former workmates down at Capitol Police, as well as several other people, and I'd put this book together, and I submitted it to a publisher, and I was lucky. I submitted it to three publishers at first, and the first publisher I submitted to, Schiffer, they snatched it up. They contacted me several days later and said, yeah, we want this. Love it. We want to go with it. So they gave me a contract.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Paul, I actually looked up Policing the Paranormal on Amazon, and I just want to let you know that I don't know if you know this or not, but it's actually out of stock. So it's temporarily unavailable. I'm gonna get a copy. You'll have to let me know when it comes in.
Sure. I could probably get you a copy. You know, Barnes & Noble has it, all the major bookstores as well. You can order through their sites. You know, Barnes & Noble, Books a Million.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, I'll check there too. I just thought it was really cool that when I went on Amazon, it was already all sold out. I was like, well, damn, this must be a really great book then. I can't wait to read it. It looks really good.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, yeah, it's always a good sign when it's out of stock. It seems to be selling quite well,
mm-hmm.
You know, and contrary to popular belief, a first-time author doesn't make any money on a book. So the publisher really goes out on a limb publishing a book from a first-time author, and they put a lot of money and a lot of effort into it. So they're the ones that you know, end up reaping all the rewards, which so they should, you know. But I didn't write the book to make money. I wrote the book because I just wanted to let people know about what's going on at the Capitol. And, you know, figured listening to police officers' testimony on it is, you know, all the more exciting, you know. Like I said, I did a lot of research and couldn't find any books out there that were done about police officers' experiences with the paranormal.
Well, you know, it would be interesting as like a follow-along, too, would be your experiences. You know, if you have had any paranormal experiences in Afghanistan, then, you know, maybe Jen or anything. I mean, they have their own kind of set of spirituality. So it would be interesting to see a Celtic take on Afghan spirituality, Afghan paranormal. So that'd be really interesting as well.
Yeah, I've thought about it, and I've worked in Afghanistan since early 2011. I've thought about that, but over there, if you ask one of the local nationals, one of the Afghans, about ghost trends, and they really they don't like talking about that type of stuff. They're very superstitious, and of course, they're very religious and stuff, you know, and it's not something they like to share. So, and I haven't ran into that many people that have had any kind of experience over there. You know, it's. Over there, people are more afraid of the living than the dead, you know, so there's a lot more going on. But it's definitely an interesting concept. I agree.
Definitely. Do you think that your heritage has anything to do with how sensitive you are to the other side? Do you think that they might, spirit might show itself to you a little bit more than, you know, somebody else and not? Believer or somebody that hasn't really been exposed because of your heritage and where you've grown up?
You know, I thought about that before, and I mean, maybe. I mean, who knows? You know, I'm definitely not psychic or nothing like that. But I've heard of terms being used like sensitives and stuff. And that's quite interesting to me, but I am a little bit sensitive to it because I had experiences when I was growing up, which are also detailed in my book. And so did my parents, you know. So maybe there's something there. I don't know. But I wouldn't want to make claim to be anything I'm not. So.
So you mentioned that you worked in Hanover County. Did you have any experiences when you were out there?
No, I had no experiences when I was out there, no. But I did hear about things like, you know, strange lights and noises on the battlefields and stuff. And I actually spoke to a National Parks police officer one night, and he was going on about being in the Garfright House, which is down there by the Cold Harbor Battlefield. I guess that was used as a Civil War hospital during the battles.
Yes.
And a lot of people died there, you know, it definitely seen a lot of action. But apparently they've got some living accommodation or had some living accommodation in there for National Parks Police who were newly assigned to the area, temporary living accommodation for them up until they found permanent accommodation somewhere else, like an apartment or a house or something. And he said that they had difficulty getting people to stay there. He said most people would go in there maybe last a night or two, and that's it. They couldn't hang out in there. He said he's heard stories of activities from the pungent smell of blood in the place, which shouldn't surprise me because the amount of blood apparently dripped from the third floor all the way to the first floor. I mean, it could probably be absorbed into the wood and over years. You know, just kind of depending on temperature, atmospheric conditions and stuff. I mean, there's, you know, there's theories out there. But, yeah, the pungent smell of blood and voices, screams, footsteps, doors banging, the usual stuff. And he said, most people didn't last more than a night or two in that place. And it was renowned through National Park Service that, nobody wanted to live there or nobody wanted to stay there. So, could be something to it.
That sounds incredible. I would love to go there.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's National Park Service property, so getting in there is always a bit of a pain trying to get permission.
Yes, we've tried to get into a couple of National Park Service sites, and they're not really into it, which, I mean, I can understand. They want to be respectful and, you know, I mean, I understand, but.
Yeah.
So we definitely have experienced that.
Oh, yeah. There's also Scotchtown, Patrick Henry House. That place, I heard of an officer having an experience there. And the alarms used to go off there all the time, like an interior motion detector alarm. And we get up there and the place was secure. But at nighttime, you go out there and it's pitch black because nobody lives out there. There's nothing around. There's no streetlights or nothing. It's pitch black. And I remember going there for an alarm call one night. I didn't see anything, but when I went around the back of the building, there is a flock of sheep that are kept in like a little farm yard to the side of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And they all waited until I got around the back of the building. It's pitch black. And then they all started up with the, running around and making noise. And scared the life out of me. So, I was like, yeah, thanks for that, sheep. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, they literally waited until I was right up on them before they made any noise and just scared the life out of me. So, I got out of there pretty quick. But a friend of mine did say that he went up there on an alarm call one night and found the door, main door, unlocked. And when he went to close it, it felt like somebody pulled the door open again on the inside. He was pulling to close it. They were pulling to open it. And he kind of struggled for a second, but pulling it. And he said it definitely felt like someone was on the other side of that door handle and grabbed the door handle and tried to pull the door out of his hand. And he said he just kind of, stuck his head in there, made sure there was no one around, closed the door, made sure it was locked, and got out of there. Yeah, he said it was kind of weird. But, who knows? And I know that there is stories, in the legend attached to that particular house. I think it was, I could be wrong, I'm not a historian, but I think it was, there was a woman, I think it might have been Patrick Henry's wife, that died in the basement.
Yes, she was mentally ill and she had to be
restricted to the basement with slaves down there to take care of her.
Okay, yep, that's what I heard. And people have said that sometimes they go down there and the spinning wheel is spinning, and they'll hear noises and sense there's someone there, and there's even been reports of seeing her down there, and people have looked through the window and seen her standing there. So, who knows?
Hmm, that's intense. I've always wanted to go to Scotchtown. I know a lot of groups that have been there, and they've all had nothing but the greatest experiences and these wonderful things these things that have happened to them. I mean, I think probably normal people don't think that's wonderful, but I think we're all probably a special breed. It's just the way it goes.
And, you know, it's a shame because of the security restrictions down at the Capitol. It's a shame, you know, no one can get down there and actually do an investigation on the haunting of the Capitol. Governor's Mansion, you know, the Governor's Mansion was extremely, well, I should say is, but I don't know for sure it is, but it was extremely active. You know, obviously because of the security down there, there's pretty much no way you could get permission to go conduct an investigation.
Yeah.
I mean, the governor lives on site with his family and stuff. But there was a lot of activity down there when I was working there and before I was working there. You're talking, you know, poltergeist activity, objects being moved, thrown, doors being slammed, usual footsteps, voices, right up to apparitions. Several people have seen the apparition either in a window one of them, a friend of mine, Joe, police officer, I think he's still at Capitol Police, maybe, but he was going up the stairs one night up to the second floor. And there's a mirror halfway up the stairs on the wall, and he looked in the mirror, and there was the figure of the ghostly lady standing right behind him.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
that'd be it. Be going ahead and going home for the night.
Yep. Yeah, and there's a story that a police officer actually did that back in the day, way before I worked there. He actually was working in a mansion, came face to face with the ghostly woman, and I think it was on the stairway, and he walked right out of there, went into the office, turned in his badge and his gun, and said, "Thank you.
Yep.
I won't be back." You know, so.
That'd be a good round.
It was a very active place. I had a couple of experiences in there myself. I heard a lot of noises and stuff. Door slamming in particular, when there was no one in there. And furniture being moved. It sounded like furniture being dragged upstairs. And, you know, cold spots, that's another one. And then just the, you know, you're sitting there alone in the mansion at night, you know, there's no one home, and you just get that overwhelming feeling that you're not alone, even though you know you are alone. All security systems are set, so no one's come in, no one's snuck up on you. And, yeah, it's an uncomfortable feeling.
For sure. Yeah, before I came to Richmond, I did some duty at the Pentagon, and I had night shift, of course, because I was, you know, a peon. And I had very similar experiences, you know, nothing that you could ever have somebody come in and investigate, but you'd have very significant things that would happen that would just kind of set you on your heels. You know, you're walking down the hallway at night, and you know for a fact that it is a deserted hallway. There's nobody in the offices at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. That's just not a thing. And all of a sudden, a door opens or a door closes, or you hear your name. Oh, God, that happened to me once.
Yeah.
In, like, one of the way that they have the rings, there's actually, like, a little alleyways in between the rings. And so it's pitch black dark because it's, like, almost underground. And I'm walking in between the rings and I hear my name and I'm like, well, okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go this way quickly.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the other way.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that kind of activity, at the Virginia Capitol, you know, and, what people don't realize unless they've gone on a tour and, it's inside the old house chamber. If you look on the wall, it's a plaque, to the right-hand side of the door as you walk in. And it commemorates the disaster in the Capitol where a couple hundred years ago there was a court session being held in the Capitol because it used to double for the Court of Appeals. And the floor collapsed under the weight of all the people that were attending the court hearing. And the floor collapsed onto the floor upstairs collapsed onto the first floor. And I think it was like 65 people died. So definitely been a lot of death in that room. And the strange thing is about that room is at night. It was always the coldest room in the building. Inexplicably, there's no explanation for it. I mean, it's, you know, they've got climate control systems in there and everything else, but it was always a lot colder in that room than everywhere else. And it was so cold that in the summertime, we'd leave the doors of the old house chamber open. So it had a bad condition the rest of the first floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And when that disaster happened at the Capitol, it was actually due to some negligence, really, on the part of the architect that placed that floor, because he set it on like a 4-inch ledge. So it was never going to be able to hold a lot of people.
Right.
And when they were pulling people out of the rubble, they just laid everybody out on the grounds, and anybody that needed to be treated was treated out there too.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh. I'm reading the account of it right now on something called Disastrous History, and it's pretty gruesome, like the description that they're giving. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, April 27th, 1870. I'm just reading it in my book right now, so I've got a photograph of plaque on the wall. It's in my book. But, 62. There you go, 62. And the injury of 251. So, yeah, pretty gruesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just kind of wondered what happened to the architect that did that.
Yeah, no idea.
He's hanging around anywhere feeling guilty.
Maybe. He could be the one with the footsteps at night walking down the hallway.
Yeah. He's the one walking up and down the hallways.
That's it. Maybe.
Checking things, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting place to be in the middle of the night, you know, because generally the only person in there as well. It used to be that way when I worked there. You'd have one person assigned to the building, and you'd just basically be in there on your own all night, unless somebody else comes in to relieve your seat and go get a coffee or something. But other than that, it's a very lonely 8 hours. And back before the renovations, there was no decent fire suppression or security system, because the building was so old, the wiring was so old and everything, it just wasn't really reliable. So your job, and a lot of this happened before we went to the academy, because before you go to the academy, you're not certified, so you're just basically working as a security officer, you know. So at least you're still, you know, sworn and taking home a paycheck, but you're basically stuck inside a building all night or all day, if you're lucky enough to get days. But, I was doing night shifts. So your job would be to, about every hour, get up and walk around the building. Because, like I said, there was no reliable fire detection system or security system. So, you know, you were there for that reason. And, so you're doing these laps of the building. I mean, going into all the areas that a tourist can go. Checking rooms and stuff like that. And, most of the place was dark. I mean, it shut off the main lights at night. So you're just walking around, just with your flashlight in your hand. It's pretty creepy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yep.
So if you were going to go anywhere in the world and experience paranormal activity or go on a hunt or have an experience, like, where would you want to go?
I've always wanted to go to Alcatraz. Because I've been to different places in the U.S., but I've never been to the West Coast, and I've always thought Alcatraz would be great. Another place I wouldn't mind going is Central State Penitentiary up in PA.
We've looked at that multiple times. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I'd love to go there too. So they're like my two favorites. It's not that I, pull any favor to prisons or anything like that. It's just they just seem to be two really active locations. They're always on those, you know, those shows like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures and stuff. They're always featured. I just love the locations. And if, like I said, I'm always kind of skeptical of the TV shows because, you know, I'm always asking myself the question how much it is just for entertainment value. But if what they're saying, and even if a small percentage of what they're presenting as evidence is true, then they're definitely active locations. And I've read up on the locations as well. There's a lot of, testimony and evidence that suggests that both places are really haunted. So I'd definitely like to visit them. And another favorite is myself and my girlfriend. We want to go to the Stanley Hotel in Colorado.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That one's beautiful.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah, yeah. I always wanted to go there, so me and my girlfriend made a pact that we will get there eventually and spend a night in the Stanley Hotel. So can't wait.
Yep, definitely. So I think that you have to go to Alcatraz, and you might have to go to Central State, because I can't think of anyone better to go ghost hunting with at one of those two locations than a sensitive cop. Like, you might get more than you bargained for at those locations, especially if they find out, especially if they know, you know, that you're law enforcement and that you are sensitive. They'll be, I think, itching to talk to you or something.
Maybe. Hopefully I'll be safe, you know.
Yeah.
So, no, they're definitely interesting locations, like I said, and I've done a little bit of reading up on them as well, seeing them on TV, on those shows, and I'd like to get there, definitely, you know. And, of course, the Stanley Hotel, I've seen a couple of investigations that were done there. I think the Ghost Hunters team did an investigation there. Mm-hmm. It might have even been like a Halloween special or something like that, but that was pretty good. And, of course, I love the movie The Shining, so why not, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And Estes Park, which is right outside of the Stanley, is probably one of the best places I've ever been. Like, it's such a small town. They actually have, like, a really nice Main Street, you know, old school style Main Street, and you can just stroll down that Main Street all day long. They have like a really cool like little chocolate shop on one end, and then you walk all the way down and walk all the way back up with, you know, a cup of hot chocolate or something. It is fantastic. The whole place is just beautiful. And then of course you have the Stanley overlooking everything, and you can see it from everywhere. It's really cool.
Right. Yeah, I definitely got to go out there.
Yeah, beautiful place.
So what would you say is the scariest place that you've been? Or have you been anywhere that was, you know, really creepy feeling?
I would probably have to say the place that gave me the creeps the most was the Supreme Court building on 9th Street adjacent to Capitol Square in Richmond. Definitely.
Really?
Definitely. That place, for some reason, just used to give me the creeps. And it was even before I heard other people's stories from that place. It's just something about it. I don't know whether it's the architecture on the interior or something. I don't know. But that place just gave me the creeps from day one. And I had an experience down there. Like I said, you know, I felt like someone just walked past me, and I smelled the cigar smoke and stuff. And then after that, I found out the story of the old security guard that died on the premises when he passed away. And then also about the shooting that occurred back in the 70s where the guy died. Like I said, it just creeped me out. And then I had that experience. I was walking as well on one of the floors. I think it was the 5th or 6th floor. One night, and just have my flashlight in my hand, and the only the emergency exit lights are on, so it's pretty dim lights. And I just looked up, you know, I was just kind of walking forward, not really paying attention to anything. And I swear a shadow up ahead of me, probably 10, 20 meters ahead of me, walked right across the hallway. But there's no doors in that vicinity. It was just the shadow just decided to walk from right to left, right across the hallway. That kind of stopped me in my tracks. I was like, what was that? And it's like, you know, up there, there's no movement from, like, car headlights and, like, that shining through windows to cause those kind of light movements. It was just me, you know. And, you know, I just, like I said, I couldn't find it, and I stayed there for a minute and, you know, kind of walked up and down the hallway and listened and stuff, but there was nothing else happened, and kind of no explanation for it. So, oh, well, who knows? But it's definitely a creepy location, without a doubt.
Yeah, I don't know how you did it. I would have had to have somebody with me or something. I don't know. That might have been too much for me.
It's yeah. It was there was some nights when I really had to force myself to go up on some of those floors, you know. But plenty of coffee. You know, plenty of coffee get me going. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I did look, and it looks like if people are interested, they can order your
book directly from your publisher.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they've got it available there. And
yep.
I don't know about April, but I can't wait to read it.
I know. I'm sitting here filling out my checkout slip right now.
And I'm sorry, I did have the copies, the author copies they sent me from the publisher. But I published it in 2013, and I've gone through. They sent me like 25 copies, and I've gone through them, handing them out to friends and stuff like that. I have none left. So if I had a complimentary copy, I'd send you one, but I don't have any on me.
We are so happy to help support, somebody who is not only interested in the paranormal, but has produced a really outstanding book. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that it's freaking sold out on Amazon, if nothing else. I'll take that as a good cue that it's a really quality book. And like Carrie said, I can't wait to read it either. So, no, we're happy to support. And hopefully this will draw people as well toward your book, so.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Well, usually when I'm visiting the Barnes & Noble stores, I always check to see what's on the shelf, and I've had quite a lot of success. The one at Virginia Center Commons, the Barnes & Noble up there, I've been in there a few times, and it's always been on the shelf. And in fact, I was up there one day, and there was a girl that works there. She was actually looking at the ghost books. And I told her I recommended my book to her. I picked it up, said, I could recommend this one. She said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah. And then I got talking to her and said, actually, I wrote it. So if you don't want to buy it, that's fine. And she was like, oh, my God. So she had me sign it right there, and she bought the book. So that was cool. But it's generally on the shelf at the Barnes & Noble in the Virginia Center Commons. And with it being a Virginia-based book, a lot of the time the out-of-area or out-of-state Barnes & Nobles are not going to have it on the shelf because, it's pretty much a Virginia-based mm-hmm. book, but they always have it available for, they can order it and get it in 48 hours type of thing. So,
Well, we want to thank you for being on with us tonight.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, Paul, it has been an absolute pleasure. You've got some really great stories, and hopefully you'll be adding to those soon, going to one of those locations we were talking about. So really, really glad to have you on. Hopefully we'll go ahead and post this on our on the Freaks and Geeks Paranormal Radio Show page, and we'll also probably go ahead and solicit this out through our own personal pages as well, which is what we typically do. Go ahead and Instagram it up, do the whole suite. But thank you so much for being on. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Good talking to you. Right. Carrie?
You too. You both.
Carrie, I hope you have a good week.
I hope you have a great week.
Like broke just now. Huh? Yeah. Right.
What?
You sounded like a robot just now. I don't know whether it was the radio that was breaking up or what, but you were like,
No, I was just already shedding my human suit for the night.
Oh, I guess something I got to post on our page for you. I picked it out just for you, too. So you just wait. You just wait with bated breath for that one. All right. Well, I guess another episode has come to a close.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and everybody. I had a great time tonight. Learned some new stuff.
I want to go to the Capitol right now. My ass would get arrested, though. I'd be trying to get into the damn Supreme Court building, and they'd be like, "Excuse me, ma'am, what are you doing?" I'd be like, "No, it's cool. I read the book. I read Policing the Paranormal. It's fine. Don't arrest me. It's fine. I just want to get in here. I just want to smell the cigar. It's fine."
They do give tours.
Yeah, you'd be bailing me out. That's what would happen. Alrighty. Well, everybody, have a really good week. Carrie, have a really good week. And we can't wait to talk to you guys again next week with a new topic that will be very interesting. For sure.
Yep. See you next week.
Guaranteed.
I said, yeah, we'll see you next week.
Yep. All right. Later, guys.
Night.